wherever you go, however you go. For energy on the go, it's got to be 5-Hour Energy. It works fast, it works long, it tastes good, and with zero sugar and 4 calories, there's nothing holding you back. Fits your pocket, fits your backpack, fits your on-the-go life, whether you're going to work, going on vacation, or just going out with friends. 5-Hour Energy. Energy on the go. For more information, visit 5hourenergy.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Change Agent's Dilemma for Tuesday, November 15th, 2011. I'm your host, Heather Stagel, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, as I do once a month on Blog Talk Radio. This show is one of the many ways I help equip individuals to lead organizational change at Enclaria. The Change Agent's Dilemma is how to influence change without authority, and my goal with this show is to provide ideas and share stories to help you do just that. Today, my guest is Amir Ganad, who is here to tell us the story of how his team transformed a manufacturing plant's performance from worst to first. Amir has 25 years of experience in leadership and organizational development with Procter & Gamble and Sunny Delight Beverages Company. Amir, who holds a master's degree in mechanical engineering from Georgia Tech and an MBA from Wilmington College, has lived in 4 countries and has managed operations, designed and conducted training sessions, and facilitated workshops in various locations in the United States, Far East, and Europe. Amir has hands-on experience in operations management, as well as development and implementation of organizational effectiveness strategies in a variety of business situations, including startups, joint venture partnerships, acquisitions, and divestitures. I can't say that word. Amir is also a registered corporate coach and a highly skilled facilitator. Amir, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show, Heather.
Sure. So let's set the stage up front, and why don't you tell us the story leading up to this transformation?
Great. I'm happy to do that. So I work for Sunny Delight Beverages Company. We have 5 plants across North America, and the plant in Atlanta is our largest plant. We make about a third of all the Sunny D that is sold in North America. And I got here about 7.5 years ago, and there is a part of me that really wants to tell the story like this, like things were really messed up and I came in and fixed it up. But that's really not true, because when I first got there, things seemed to be going pretty well. However, what had happened was that we went through a divestiture, essentially. We were sold by our parent company, Procter & Gamble at the time, to a private equity firm. And at that time, for several years, Procter & Gamble had not really invested in the business, in growing the business. So what happened was, right around the time that I got there, essentially, we lost a lot of resources during the transition, and our business started picking up, and our new owners really started investing in our business. So within a very short period of time, essentially, we went from a very, very simple business with a lot of resources to a rather complex business, very demanding sort of business situation and a few resources. And it became real clear that the systems and capabilities and the trust level and everything else that we had in place was just not good enough. So our results just really went down the tube on every front. Our running efficiency, our quality, our morale, you name it. And we were basically, at that time, we had 4 plants in the company, and we were number 4 out of 4. And morale was low, and our leadership really didn't have any confidence in us. And what we did was within about a year and a half or so, we managed to turn our results around. And in just about every result area, we accomplished a significant improvement, and we went within the next couple of years, we went from being number 4 to being number 1 out of now 5 locations, because we acquired another plant at the time. So and currently we are essentially the quality champion in the company and the safety champion in the company, which means we have the best quality and safety results in the company. We are at 0 total incident rates total incident rate at both of those, which means we've gone over a year without quality or safety incidents. We have been recognized externally. We've been featured in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, been on a couple of radio shows. We've also gotten a couple of awards from APIC and PRISM for use of coaching and that sort of thing. So we essentially turned things around to go from the worst in the company to not only the best in the company, but also delivering benchmark results in the industry.
Great. So you found yourself in a situation where you said morale was low, quality was low, efficiency was low due to the changes in that impacted the plant. Mm-hmm. And so what happened? You know, how did you get started? Who realized that, okay, we need to do something here? You know, what was the impetus to start this transformation?
Well, essentially what we did was we very quickly figured out that things are not going well. Our customers were unhappy. Our suppliers were unhappy. My bosses were unhappy. And certainly the people in the plant were not having a lot of fun under the circumstances. So one of the things that I did initially, I was the plant manager at the time, and I've picked up some additional responsibilities, and I direct our lean activities across the company as well as workplace excellence. But at that time, my primary responsibility was for the Atlanta plant and another location. And so one of the first things that I did was really wanted to get my leadership team on the same page from standpoint of making sure that we're operating off the same values and principles, because I sensed that there were really some disconnects in that area. And what we ended up doing, one of the first things was essentially making sure that we had the right people in leadership roles, and that did result in some separation. Some people left voluntarily and some people involuntarily. Now, we weren't trigger happy. We weren't just out to cut people because it was like, okay, it was their fault. But we really went on a journey for a few months to really make sure that we are really doing things based on the same principles. In fact, some of the people who at that time were really having a terrible performance are superstars today at the plant. So several of them who ended up staying ended up really growing and doing really great. But Heather, one thing that I really recognized is we started making some progress, but we kind of plateaued, and I discovered very quickly that there was the one main barrier at the plant, barrier to progress. And once I discovered what that was, then we really started making progress. And I guess you might want to know what that was. And it was actually a person, namely Anir Ganand. So I quickly
wait, that's your name.
That's me, that guy right there. So, you know, to be honest, I was a bit self-righteous. I had had a pretty successful career with Procter & Gamble for about 19 years prior to that. And, you know, I kind of knew what worked. And my thing was, you know, empower the people, energize them, and so on and so forth, and everything works. And I was doing that, a lot of that, and it helped us. But it really wasn't getting us beyond a certain level of performance. And one thing that I found out about myself, I don't know if any of the listeners can relate to this, but what I learned about myself is that when I know something works, I go do it. And if it doesn't produce any results, guess what I do? I do more of it. So, you know, like he who's good with the hammer sees everything as a nail, right? So
right.
Point is that I really had to very quickly discover that, yes, there are some things that need to be done that require me to not just be a hammer, but be a Swiss Army knife, you know, and really get into things, that approaches that I may not be totally comfortable with. And once I discovered that, I really recognized that I really needed to get myself out of the way so that the organization can continue to grow. So that was one of the first steps, I would say, that really helped us. Me getting myself out of the way. And, you know, and one of those things, one of the specific areas where I felt like I was really inducing a lot of dysfunction is that I was really used to focusing on activities and just trusting that the results will come. And I've had a good bit of success with that. But in this case, I really started focusing on the results that we want to deliver. So I'd say, and, you know, I refer to myself in terms of, hey, I did this, I did that. And I do that on purpose because I want to make sure that, you know, leaders understand that it's got to start with you. I mean, I really get that, you know, somebody had to stand up and say, you know what, we're going to do things differently, and that had to be me. However, the results that we achieved would not have been possible had it not been for the people at the plant extending that trust to me, and they've gone well above the call of duty to make this happen. So I don't want it to sound like, hey, I did this, but it is important for me to convey that the leader is uniquely qualified to do certain things that have to be done.
Okay.
So, you know, one of the first things, one of the smartest things I did was in the midst of that turmoil, I really set a stretching target for us. And I said, we're going to be the showcase of excellence. And so, you know, we kind of put a little logo together, and I went out there and started talking about that. And people were kind of initially looking at me like, I don't know, like I have two heads maybe. And they were like, well, okay, well, what the heck is a showcase of excellence, first of all? And secondly, don't you see we're trying to survive here? And but one thing that I really, really get about that is that the lesson I learned throughout this whole thing was that, you know, the leader is uniquely qualified and responsible for establishing a future that people can live into. In other words, if we only survive, you know, go for survival, we'll solve today's problems, but then we'll have some more problems. Kind of like the prescription drug commercials. At the end, they come and say, okay, this will fix your headache, but you may be suicidal, you may have this kind of problem and that kind of problem. So
right.
Change doesn't work. Transformation works when you put something out there in the future and work toward it. So that's one of the first things that we did that I thought was extremely impactful.
So the showcase of excellence, what does that mean? What did that mean to you, and how did you communicate that to everybody?
Well, you know, this is where we, for the, you know, first few weeks that I was talking that, actually, once again, I was thinking I came up with something really great. Why don't these people get it? That sort of thing. But then I really got that, hey, you know, we need to define what that means. And what we did was we sat together with my leadership team of about 12 leadership technicians at the plant, and we really defined it. We said we are delivering benchmark results at the company. And we defined like 12 or 13 bullet points specifically as to what it's going to be like when we are showcase of excellence. We said, for instance, that we have other plants and people from other companies coming to see how we're delivering these results. We really put a lot of descriptors out there for ourselves that said, this is what it means when we say showcase of excellence. And that is when it really began to take shape for people. And people started wrapping their mind around, wow, that maybe that's possible. Maybe we can make that happen.
Okay. So turning it from just being words, really, into being a specific vision. Did you have goals and measures at that point? Or, you know, metrics?
Yes, we did.
Targets
Absolutely.
Okay.
We did. We established very specific measures and targets for those. However, I was real clear that, you know, just it's not only enough to have those targets, that there has to be something behind those, and the spirit of pride that something like being the showcase of excellence kind of created for us really sort of supplemented the specific hard number results that we had put in front of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the next thing that we did was we added another element to our Showcase of Excellence vision, and we said we want to be the cradle of prosperity. And this actually didn't start off as a strategy, but I noticed that a lot of our employees were suffering from all kinds of different issues in their personal lives. We had way too many, you know, 401k loans, and way too many garnishments, and way too many people suffering from relationship issues and things like that. So we really started providing a lot of coaching on a one-to-one basis. And then it really dawned on me that if you really want to have a successful, you know, workforce, you know, nurture the whole person, and a more productive employee will emerge. essentially. So this was not a strategy to go tweak something in the people and make them a better employee. It came out of a genuine concern for people. We did lunch and learns. We brought a financial peace class into the workplace. We did wellness seminars. I did a lot of coaching myself for folks. But essentially what that ended up doing was two things. One was it removed a lot of problems out of their lives or solved a lot of their problems so they could be more at peace. But the byproduct of it was that it really created a lot of trust in leadership because people could see that, you know, we didn't really have to go in and do all of these things, but we did them because we cared about them. So that was a very important element as well.
Yeah, that's very powerful, that idea of caring for the whole person who's an employee for you. I mean, but at the same time, one of the thoughts I thought when you were describing that is, what did upper management think of that? I mean, that's awfully touchy-feely and even sounds a little bit over the top. And so I'm wondering was there any pushback from that direction, and what other resistance did you feel pursuing that cradle of prosperity, and what did you do about it?
Yes, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Touchy-feely is the word that I heard a lot of times from all kinds of directions. It's like, hey, why aren't we getting the results? And again, initially, I was really kind of defensive about it. Well, geez, why don't these people get me? You know, this stuff works and all that. But then at some point I realized, I said, you know what? My results are terrible. And for me to earn the right to continue to do what I need to do, I simply must demonstrate that this stuff gets results. So, you know, this all sounds really glorious at this point. It sounds really like a story with a happy ending, but believe me, most stories with a happy ending throughout the journey don't really feel like it. And I personally, you know, during those times, I had a really tough time really continuing to stay on the court and staying on track with this work. But the good news is that what my boss told me at one point was, hey, all that stuff that you're doing in Atlanta, I want that everywhere else. And that's how I ended up sort of getting some additional responsibilities. I spend a good bit of my time now going around to the various plants and providing what we call workplace excellence leadership development training. We've put a 3-month program together that starts with a 3-day session, and it's a bunch of those kinds of touchy-feely things that have now been proven to deliver results. But at that time, it was not easy. Yeah.
That's a great message. You know, like you said, the stories that have happy endings, they didn't feel like they were going to be happy endings in the middle of it. So
absolutely,
keep pushing through. And also I like that realization you had that it's like, why don't these people get what I'm trying to do? And switching that to, okay, well, I need to demonstrate results. And like you said, you demonstrated results. And then they said, well, how about if we do this everywhere else? So
yeah.
That's a great
story. You know, a phrase that I introduced to the plant was, you know, I am the one, and it's not about me. This is a very, had a profound effect on us in that, you know, if it's going to happen, somebody's got to say, I am the one. And regardless of, you know, well, I'm not only the one if these conditions are met. No, I am the one. Unconditionally, I'm the one who's going to make it happen. So I know you have a passion for leading from the middle, Heather, and I think it's so important that for people to realize you don't have to be the CEO to declare yourself to be the one. You can really take a part of your business or a result and say, declare yourself the one. But then it's not about me. It has to do with the fact that we make everything mean something about us. You know, at that time, it's just every 5 minutes I have to catch myself and say, hey, it's not about you. It's not about them not getting you. It's not about, you know, you're just a little tiny dot in the universe, but you're the one, by the way. So go make it happen. So,
I love that.
I really have to get out of my head. You know? So go ahead.
Oh, that's great. So you had these goals to be the center of excellence, or the – you used a different word.
Showcase of excellence,
right?
Yeah.
Showcase of excellence.
Mm-hmm.
So the one that people come to look at and say, how do you do this because we want to do it better? And then you have this idea of the cradle of prosperity where you cared for the whole person. And so I'm curious to know what – What did you do in order to achieve some of these, the vision and the goals that you set out? What was your approach?
Well, one of the things, and there were a number, I've got, believe me, I've got like pages and pages, because halfway through this this journey, I felt like, wow, I need to start journaling some of this stuff because I may need to do this again. And so there were a lot of things that we tried. For every one thing that worked, there were three things that didn't work. But one essential model that I want to kind of talk about for a minute here is compliance versus commitment. Essentially, we recognized that there were a lot of dissatisfiers in our business for the employees. You know, they could have been, you know, equipment is not running, or it could be that we had some issues with, communication or whatever. But eliminating those dissatisfiers only gets you to compliance. And what I always say to leaders, my coaching to leaders, is sometimes leaders kind of tend to have an entitlement mentality when it comes to commitment. We feel like our employees owe us their commitment. And truth is, they don't owe us their commitment. All they owe us for that paycheck is compliance.
Right.
Commitment we have to earn by creating the right conditions in which they offer up their commitment for free. So, therefore, we not only eliminated a lot of dissatisfiers, we began to put in a lot of motivators. We recognized people for their results. We began to identify tangible equipment issues that we had, and we began to work through those. We broke down the silos. People at that time were really working in their own silos. And we really, one of my employees called it forced collaboration. It was like Amir forced us to collaborate, and that is really true, and that, you know, we need to collaborate, guys, otherwise we're going to lose. So there were a number of interventions that we made. We got everybody together in off-site meetings. Every about 12 or 14 months, we would get everybody together. We would make sure that everybody's on the same page. We'd get them involved in, developing strategies and that sort of thing. And so there were a lot of different things involved in this journey, which I don't know that we have time to get into the details of. But as I said, most of them have to do with really developing a culture of being on the court, is what we called it. And that was a kind of a buzzword that after one of our offsites just went viral. Like, are you on the court or are you in the stands? Because when you think about it, people in the stands are talking about the game while people on the court are playing the game. So
yeah,
we kind of got everybody T-shirts that says, hey, showcase of excellence, I'm on the court, and that became our language. And when you think about it, how you change culture is you alter the language. When you alter the language of an organization, you immediately alter its culture. So we really managed to do that.
Great. Well, what would you say was your greatest challenge in this?
I'd say probably I would say there's probably a tie between two issues. One was that we had a very low self-image, and so it took some time and some convincing to say, guys, we want to get out of surviving. We can and will be showcase of excellence. So that was the one thing, to just kind of get people to believe it's possible. And the second thing was to get them out of the mode of, okay, tell me what you want me to do, because we had a lot of capable people who had not been used to sort of coming up with their own strategies and collaborating with their peers. So they were looking to me to tell them sort of what to do. So those two things, changing our self-image and causing people to collaborate and really lead as they should, took us some time to sort of put in place.
Okay. Well, how did you go about changing the self-image?
Well, I tell you what, I began to really accentuate the positive every chance I got. I mean, our target was to, let's just say, we wanted to run 85% efficiency for a whole month. But if I saw one team run 85% for 3 hours, I would just make up these posters and put them everywhere saying, see, this team did it for 3 hours, so we can do it over a shift and over a day and all of this. So one of the things I did was that. The other thing was, quite frankly, that I continued to exude confidence. You know, we confronted reality around what is not going well. But at the same time, every time we had a problem, we stated, here's how we want it to be. And again, accentuated the positive, saying, hey, this is what we're going to do. We got into action. Because a lot of times what happens is our self-image is really fed by what we have or have not accomplished in the past. And what I wanted to do was kind of, cut the past out of kind of our future, if you will, and create a future for us that was based on what we declare into the future, not just based on, well, we've always been like this, so therefore it's always going to be like that. So I created sort of a disconnect there that says, okay, it has been like this, but this is the way it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And when you think about it, when you actually believe something to be in your future, it completely shifts your state in the present, regardless of what your past has been. If I told you right now you're going to have $1 million in about an hour, your state will completely shift. I mean, that is...
Oh, yeah, I totally perked up when you said that.
Yeah, sure.
I am. So
the point, though, is that I think people are always looking at trying to figure out what is in the future, what is in their future, so they can act accordingly.
Right.
But they don't have a crystal ball, so they try to get these clues from here and there, so they can, I call it putting two and two together and getting 5,496, because we kind of fill in the blanks and say, oh, this is the way the future is going to be. Okay, and so the leader's job is to continue to paint that picture so that people's image of what the future holds is fed by the leader's vision as opposed to their own speculation.
Great. So now this transformation happened a few years ago. I think it was, 2006 through 2008, something like that? So assuming that you've maintained performance since then, how do you, once you've done the transformation, how do you stick with it? How do you keep it going?
Well, the most important thing is to make sure that the transformation is not dependent on one person. I mean, first of all the cultural things that I just talked about, did not create the results. What happened was that it allowed us to put the right emphasis on the systems and processes, the technical systems and that sort of thing, and execute those correctly so that they would produce the results. So one of the first things that we did was we made sure that we had robust processes in place and that sort of thing. The other thing is that the leadership team at the plant is, they run the plant. We used to have dozens of managers at this plant several years ago, and today there are only two direct line managers, and I'm one of them. And I have spent in the last year and a half or two, I've spent a good bit of my time at other plants doing coaching and holding workshops and things like that. So I have a leadership team that has truly embraced the vision, and it's kind of a self-correcting mechanism. Now, don't get me wrong, we're not at the finish line. We've got a lot of problems and all of this. But how we go about solving the problems, I think, is what helps us maintain our results.
Great. So what's next then?
Well, actually, we are making some significant investments in the plant, something that would not have happened several years ago. So we're automating our warehouse. We have just put in a brand new line, and so that in itself is sort of elevating the requirements on the plant. So we're having to continue to sort of grow to match the requirements of our business. And so in that sense, I think our business is going to, our plant, 6 months from now is going to look completely different than it did 6 months ago. And so that in itself is a great thing because the company has a lot of confidence in us. And as far as growth and development and teamwork and that sort of thing, we're continuing to do the work. And one of the things that we've done is we've put this leadership development training together that we do every few months. And we're continuing to develop our leaders at the plant, not just people who have an official formal kind of role in leadership, but anybody who has potential and interest. So we're continuing on that journey.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Amir, for telling this story. And it's encouraging and provides a lot of tips for what people can do to transform their own environment. So
thank you.
Thanks so much
so
for
much.
Being here and for telling the story.
No problem. Thank you, Heather.
You guys did some great work.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sure. So the next episode is coming up on Tuesday, December 20th, 2011, and it's at a special time. It will be at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and the reason it's going to be later in the day than I usually have the show is because my guest is in New Zealand, and if I had the show any earlier, he would not be awake yet. So my guest is Martin Fenwick. His company is called The Change Factor. Like I said, he's in New Zealand. And the topic we're going to talk about is how do you create the safe space for change to happen? So tune in then, and like I said, December 20th at 3:30 p.m. In the meantime, if you would like to find more resources and learn how we might work together to help you influence change in your organization, please visit anclaria.com. Thank you so much for listening to the Change Agents Dilemma. Take care and best wishes for your change initiative.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
There are best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad Force Flex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
There are best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad Force Flex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty! Dude.